You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For today's coverage on the different parties' drug policies with the upcoming election, I spoke with the executive director of the New Zealand Drug Foundation, Ross Bell. I asked him to explain the organization's stance on this year's election and the different parties' policies.
Well, we've been frustrated at previous elections when parties, you know, don't want to talk about drug law, and you kind of get these promises, you know, we just want to get over the election, we don't want to fight, you know, a drug law debate during the election, but once the election's out the way, we're happy to talk to you about, you know, reform. So we've been let down in the past, and we don't want that to happen this year, and so what we've done, we've tried to make drug law reform an election issue. We held a major drug law reform event at Parliament a few months ago. We've developed what we're calling a model drug law, which talks about decriminalisation, more money for treatment, regulation of cannabis, and tabling that, you know, giving that to political parties and saying, you know, where do you stand? And through those kinds of things, we've seen, you know, some good response from some of the smaller parties, and, you know, the usual disappointment from the big parties.
So your stance on decriminalisation, why do you believe that should be a thing that happens?
Well, we're a health organisation, and we have always said that New Zealand's drug problem is first and foremost a health issue. We're also very committed to advocating for things that are well supported by evidence. And so we're saying to politicians, look at the evidence from places like Portugal, who decided to treat its drug problem as a health issue. They decriminalised all drug use and at the same time put more money into treatment, into rehabilitation, and into education and prevention. And they did that in 2001, so we've had, you know, that's been a so-called experiment that's been running for 15 or 16 years to really great success. And we think New Zealand can do the same thing. So we've said we should change our law, like the Law Commission have said, scrap the Misuse of Drugs Act, write a new law, decriminalise all drugs, and channel people who need help to that help.
So oftentimes we hear the common phrase of gateway drug when it comes to cannabis. Where do you stand on that?
Cannabis is definitely a gateway drug, but not in the way that politicians think. There is nothing magical. There is no chemical compound in cannabis that then causes people to go on and use other drugs. What I think happens instead, the gateway is more about our drug law, that if you're going to purchase cannabis from the illegal black market, you are more likely to come across dealers who will sell you other stuff. I don't have any cannabis today, but here's some meth. So the gateway is in our failed drug law, rather there being something in cannabis itself, and that's been well proven by research, including New Zealand research. A very good study out of Christchurch shows that the gateway is more about our drug law and the fact that it introduces people who just want to buy cannabis to other drugs as well.
Medicinal cannabis has come up quite a bit. How do you think it could be beneficial for our population to introduce it?
You know, medical cannabis is a slightly complicated beast, probably more complicated than it needs to be. So again, we're an evidence-based organisation. The evidence we've seen says that cannabis has a range of components in it that do bring medical benefit to a range of conditions. Ultimately, like all medical products, we would like doctors to be able to prescribe a range of different medicines based on patient's needs, you know, different ratios of THC for one illness, different ratios of CBD for another. So any pharmaceutical product should be available on doctor's prescription and that be fully subsidised, because we know medicines are expensive. So that's kind of the gold standard that I think we should all aspire to when it comes to medicine. But we don't have that yet. And so what do we do in the meantime until we get that gold standard? So we reckon the police, for example, shouldn't. In fact, they should have a policy that says they won't arrest and prosecute people who are either growing or using cannabis medically. We think that more products that are available around the world, from the Netherlands, from Australia, from Canada, should be able to be imported into New Zealand with very little hassle. and for those products to be subsidised. And if people can't afford those products, then they should be allowed to source medical cannabis products from the black market without fear of prosecution.
So I might just jump back to the political scope of this election. Do you have any specific parties that you particularly disagree with or agree with?
We particularly agree with the smaller. So the Green Party, for example, has for a long time had quite a sophisticated drug policy, more than just law reform. I think they wrap up quite a lot of good public health stuff in their policy. The Opportunities Party have worked really hard to come up with a cannabis legalisation policy, and I think there's some good thinking there. We've been really impressed with the Māori Party, who for a long time have been very conservative on drug law reform, but who are now saying really clearly, we support medical cannabis, we now support decriminalisation of cannabis, and they're happy to engage, have that conversation around legalisation. They're not there yet, but they're at least happy to talk. The two major parties, National and Labor, have been quite stubborn around these issues. I think the National MPs have been pulling out arguments from the 1970s and 1980s to justify their position, positions that can no longer in 2017 be justified. So I think they are absolute dinosaurs, and probably worse than dinosaurs. I actually think they endorse our current approach, which sees a whole lot of young people being criminalised. So I think they have a real damaging response, you know, approach to this. Labor has been wishy-washy on drug law reform for a long time, and there hasn't been any clarity. And their former leader, Andrew Little, always talked about, oh, we don't want to change the law because I'm worried about young people's brains, forgetting the fact that people are harmed right now under the current system. But more recently, and I'm thinking very recently, only in the last couple of weeks, has Jacinda Ardern started framing their policy up a little bit more sharply. They are now being more clear around their support for what the Law Commission recommended back in 2011, which is to scrap the law and start again and to have a health referral pathway. They've also talked in their health policy about more money for mental health and addiction treatment. I'm wanting to see some clearer numbers from them in their in that space. So a little bit of credit to Labor, but they're pretty late to the game.
That's the majority of my questions, but did you have anything you wanted to add to this conversation?
I think one of the things that gets missed from this debate, and it's become clearer just in the last, yesterday, is around what New Zealand's drug problem, what is the nature of our drug problem now? And look, the police yesterday put out a press release confirming that 20 cases have been referred to the coroner about deaths potentially relating to synthetic cannabinoid product. We have never seen this before. We have never seen this number of deaths related to a specific drug before in New Zealand. And it highlights that our current approach is a failure. But what it has highlighted in the last few days is the callous indifference from the current government about doing anything about that. There's been no response really from the government except for Bill English to say, well, this is a matter of personal responsibility, don't worry, the cops are going to get rid of it. And then Paula Bennett, the police minister, promising longer prison sentences. That is a failed approach to what is a public health crisis. And it's just a dreadful way, and a really upsetting way for us to finally look at how absolute bullshit our current approach to drug problems in this country is.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Following on from that, this morning I spoke to Abe Gray, former head of the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party and founder of the New Zealand Cannabis Museum in Whakamana. Abe is currently running for the Opportunities Party for the seat of Dunedin North. I started by asking him to expand on the term, the total harm of drug use.
Well, there's the harm coming from the drug itself, and then there's the harm coming from the prohibition. So, you know, the legal sanctions, the interface with the black market, most of the things that we associate with cannabis that are bad are actually side effects of prohibition. the physiological effects of cannabis are quite mild, especially when compared to other legal recreational intoxicants like alcohol.
Do you think the debate often gets twisted in that sense? People try to focus on the effects of cannabis to the individual, and we ignore the societal effects that are being caused by the current system?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, people focus on harm to the individual, but what they never say is that the harm from making it criminally prohibited and keeping it illegal is much, much greater. So, you know, in any sort of use of a substance can cause harm. You know, if you eat too much sugar or nutmeg or drink too much water, you can die. So it's all about dose. Kind of a specious argument to take massive overdoses of something and then say it's a poison. So if used properly and regulated, that's why we want to bring cannabis under regulation, because when it's a prohibition black market, there's no age restriction, there's no limit on how much you can buy, there's no quality control, no potency testing. So I just got back from a few months overseas, and I spent a lot of time in Colorado, and all of this is in place there, and it's reducing the harm. There's less youth using it. The product is standard and quantified what's in it. So people are a lot happier, and there's no criminal gangs running the show and making exorbitant profits.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the regulation that's coming in Colorado. One of the biggest reasons people support regulation is obviously to take people away from the black market, stop them interacting with criminals to procure their marijuana. In Colorado, they've employed a fully commercial model, and as a result, prices have dramatically dropped. On the Opportunities Party website under cannabis reform, they say they want to avoid this. You guys don't want to see the price potentially halve. You guys want to regulate a minimum price and a THC tax.
Yeah, so basically what we've always argued in the cannabis law reform movement is that it should be treated equivalently with alcohol. Now, we know that alcohol is a far more harmful substance, but it's the easiest way to explain the hypocrisy of prohibition. We know prohibition didn't work for alcohol, and we know it's not working for cannabis. So even though alcohol is clearly much more harmful, you know, a minimum standard would be treating them in the same way. We know that the situation with alcohol is too liberalized. There's too much sponsorship. There's too much advertising. Alcohol corporations are immensely powerful. Most of the alcohol consumption is by heavy problem users, and the alcohol companies have an interest to increase the use of those heavy problem users because that's where they get the most money. What we're trying to avoid is, you know, we're looking 10 years down the road, and we don't want a big cannabis industry that's trying to change legislation or weaken regulations or, you know, increase the use by problem users. Unfortunately, in a commercially capitalist system where you are basically legally bound to maximize the profit for your shareholders, you have no choice but to try to get more people to use your product. So that's why we want to avoid the commercial situation. And we think we can do that by using a licensing trust model. Now, this is very familiar to New Zealand. This is how all alcohol used to be sold, and this is how alcohol is sold in Sweden. Essentially, the government or the local councils are the only people that have a license to do the retailing. And so all of the money that's collected from that goes back to community projects. And it also means that they can control the density of the outlet, so there's not a liquor store on every corner. It means they can control the hours, so they're not open till like midnight. And it means they can control the minimum pricing and taxing and labeling and stuff like that. So we want to see a system like that with cannabis. And what that will mean is that all of the money that comes in from cannabis, it won't just go to the, you know, most organized entrepreneur. It will actually go to local community groups, councils, and it'll be used for local economic development.
Okay, wonderful. It sounds like you've thought about this a lot over the last few years. If I could just ask you one last question about tobacco. I know you're the cannabis man, but on the topic of drug reform, we have to talk about tobacco. Currently, the New Zealand government under National is employing a 10% tax increase every year from this year until 2020. And during this time, a lot of people I know have noticed an increase in the black market sales of tobacco. It's something that's got a bit of media attention. For example, you can buy it on Facebook Marketplace. You can buy it through other social medias. People sell drugs through things like Tinder, for example, and that extends to tobacco. Do you think that the current model of raising these taxes on tobacco is leading us to a situation where it's increasing the black market demand and we'll have a sort of prohibition not working situation for tobacco as we currently might be having with marijuana?
Oh, yeah, we're getting there already. I mean, you're seeing the dairy robberies, and that's the thing. So, like, you know, these regulations and pricing signals, they work to a certain extent, but you know, if you take them to the extreme, it's a balance. So you do have to, you know, you have to look at, you want to keep people out of the black market. But yeah, as you say, if you increase the price too much, then you're just going to create an alternative black market. So that's what we want to do with get a balance with the price with cannabis. Now, the interesting thing about tobacco is that the official government policy is smoke-free New Zealand 2025, right? They want to, like, end tobacco in New Zealand. And people have said, well, if we're trying to end tobacco use, how can we allow another smokable substance like cannabis? The interesting thing is in those smoke-free 2025 plans, which are basically saying banning tobacco, for lack of a better word, you're still allowed to grow your own tobacco at home. You're still allowed to smoke it. You're not going to get arrested and put in jail. You know, you're still allowed to trade it with your friends. And so if that's what banning something is, then I would like to see them apply those same things to cannabis, because we're not supposed to be allowed tobacco, but we can still grow it at home and we can still smoke it because it's all right if we know the risk. The same should apply to cannabis.
Do you think that this double standard is based in any economic logic or any health-based logic, or it holds older past generation prejudices to current dates?
Oh, yeah, it's all historic prejudice. But, I mean, if you look back in history in the 1920s and 30s about how cannabis first became prohibited, it was basically an industrial espionage conspiracy by some of the most powerful pharmaceutical corporations, and those same power structures have just grown and grown to this day, and they control many governments.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.